Welcome everyone. We're about to begin Bez Hashem, BPJ number 111. That's Bais Pnimi Joint Shir, Shir number 111. So Rav Aaron Peretz Friedman, the one who wrote this setting, A Table for Two, says that a student of his related that he and his wife were discussing an issue. Their perspectives were very different. And after a long exchange, he reiterated his view on the matter, and he expressed it very firmly, unequivocally, and not budging. His wife fell silent, looked at him thoughtfully for a while, and then she said as follows to him, "You know, I think you're right, but if you stated your opinion in such an extreme way that I wouldn't be able to acknowledge that you're right without completely losing my self-respect. In the stark terms that you used, I can't admit you're right without appearing foolish. I want to acknowledge that you're right. Perhaps you could say it again, this time in a way that will allow me to accept what you said while retaining my dignity and self-respect." That's a very wise woman that was very open and forthcoming in expressing this to her husband. And he was the one who felt foolish as he learned a very important truth. And he rephrased his position to her gently, and she smiled and she agreed, "You're right." So this is the idea. Words that come from the heart enter the heart. Brings down different marmakaimus for this, if it's not Mamash Chazal. Says, look in the Alshich, Devarim, Perek Vav, Pasuk Vav, and Sefer Yosher, Rabbi Natam, Shar Yud Gimel. This Devarim Hayoytzim and Alev, Nechnasim al Alev. Another Lashon from Kehelis itself, Perek Tes, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Divrei Chachamim Benachas Nishmoim. Words of the wisest, if spoken softly and gently, they are heard, they are accepted. Shlomo said in Mishlei, Perek Tes, Pasuk Ches, do not rebuke a scoffer, lest he hate you. Give Musa to a wise man, and he will love you. So, although it seems from here, and that when you admonish, and the Alshich brings this down, that when you admonish someone and you presume as a fool and you make him feel like a fool, he will hate you. But if your words build him up and portray him as wise, he will love you. So in other words, if your approach is friendly and respectful, then you have a chance of being heard and understood. But if your stance is adversarial and condemning the other person, you have no chance at all. Now, generally speaking, a wise person will accept Musar, and a foolish person would reject Musar. But one needs to know, very importantly aside, even if the person seems foolish and is not willing to be makabel things, nevertheless, even a person like that, you, with your delivery of your saying it, they will very often be receptive to it. Your approach to the degree determines whether your counsel will be heeded is based on the way you talk. So if you treat that other person as a wise man, in other words, you in the way you're talking to that person, he may be not that way, a tough customer, like you say, but you speak to him as if he's a wise man, then he will be more inclined to behave like one and love you and accept your advice as being valid. But if you, in the way you talk to him or her, depict them as a fool, through your words, you put them in the fool category, and you attack them, they will respond back foolishly. They will reject your words. They will criticize. So what we're trying to say here is a tremendous, tremendous yesod, which is that a lot of this concept of reaching another person and giving them constructive, advice on their self-correction is in your hands more than you imagine. Even with tough customers, even with difficult people, you can often elicit a positive response and improve the situation. Doesn't always work. Sometimes people are not receptive. Even if you do a perfect job, that's possible. But very often, if you know how to handle it right, you'll be able to speak in a proper way where you treat the person with the respect you touch upon their tzelem alikim, they will respond back accordingly. So in the beginning, in the Mishle, the surface level of it is, know your audience, and if they're wise, they'll listen, so you offer your Musar, and if they're foolish, they won't listen, so don't bother with them. That is the basic pshat of this pasuk in Mishle. But the Alshich's pshat in Mishle, the way the Gemara is saying it is, no. You offer that critique or advice, but you offer it in a way that the recipient will accept it. But don't speak in a way that will not be accepted. That is what it means. It's going on you. When it says, don't rebuke a scoffer lest he hate you, according to this pshat means, don't view him as such, because then he will hate you. Reprove a wise man and he will love you means, view him as a wise man, even if he isn't. The address will be, the response will often be a lot more positive than you can ever imagine. You see, some people have that knack. A stubborn person never accepts Musar. All of a sudden, one guy, he reaches, he says it a certain way, and he'll accept it. What did he do? He treated him with a dignity and respect. So last year, we talked about how a king swore, he was angry at his son, swore to hit him with a sharp sword, but instead put it in the shield and hit his son that way, where there was no major injury and he still kept his oath. There is a second mashal that is given by Rabbi Levi. Similar idea of how, again, when David HaMelech says, Al biabcha techicheni, don't rebuke me in your anger. And Rabbi Levi says a different mashal. A king who became angry at his son and in his rage swore to hit him with 100 ropes. Hit him with 100 ropes. But the king thought to himself, if I lash him with 100 ropes, he'll die. Well, who will inherit my kingdom? And he's my son. But if I nullify my decree, that's impossible because I already made the gezeira. So what does he do? He folds that rope. He took a single rope, folded it into 100 times, told these small rope segments, and hit him once with this small, blunt instrument of 100 ropes. So the result was he did not injure his son. May have had a little bit of a feeling something, but no real harm here. And kept his decree. Again, you could always daven to remove the decree completely. But even if there is some type of a gezer where something has to happen, Hashem does it in a way where it's extremely merciful, where you're not harmed. Hurts maybe a little bit, but you're not harmed. And he saves you. From here, you'll learn now that if you have many complaints against your someone else, if you unleash them all at once, they will hate you. They will reject you. You will accomplish nothing. That's like 100 different ropes. Rather than offer many complaints, what you do is you isolate and you identify and concentrate only on the source of the improper behavior. And by correcting the source, all the symptoms will automatically work themselves out and they will disappear. So in other words, the lesson over here is focus not on the behaviors. Don't focus on the outward symptoms. That's a waste of time. Instead, go straight into identifying the underlying causes. The underlying causes which you think motivate behaviors that you find objectionable. And you need to really present this with humility, because sometimes you read a situation, you may be incorrect in the way you evaluated it. Okay, and remember, just like, you know, you're trying to think about how to do this with your spouse, you're not perfect either. You have your own behaviors and symptoms, and you have your own underlying causes. So when you're right now being distressed by your spouse's symptoms and behaviors and your spouse's underlying causes, you need to treat that with a certain respect and humility. But when you do that, you don't look at the outward behavior per se. But what is the core issue? What's underlying? What's really bothering them? So here's an example. An incorrect concept would be, you come home, leave your coat on the chair, leave the dirty dishes on the table, and you expect me to wait on you like a maid. And the correct way of saying it is, similar to like before, you know I'm tired. At the end of the day, I know you're tired too. But after you relax for a few minutes, please help me clean up a little bit because I'm also tired. That's the correct way of saying it. The third mashal, which is the one that I think is most common that most people know, is what does it mean? It's Rav Huna. What does it mean? Al biyabcha techicheni, don't rebuke me in anger. It's a mashal where in front of a king is a huge rock. And the king got very angry at his son, and in his rage, he swore that he will throw this boulder at his son. And then the king immediately reconsidered. If I hurl this huge stone at him, he won't survive the blow. It'll crush him. Who will inherit my kingdom? He's my son. But if I nullify the decree, I can't. So what do? He took the large boulder, crushed it into little pebbles, and threw each little pebble at his son, one at a time, that will not injure his son, but he did not nullify the decree either. Again, you could always ask Hashem to completely wipe away a ramification, if you really do deep tshuva, but in cases where that doesn't happen, what Hashem does anyway, it just throws little pebbles at you, and the little minor inconveniences, you know, something spilled, got your pants a little dirty, oh, you have to change it, you know, those minor things where you're not hurt. From here, we learn out that before unleashing a large cluster of various unrelated complaints, consider whether this heavy, heavy barrage of complaints will leave a crushing impact of the Lord. Whether this heavy barrage will have a crushing impact of the large boulder, which will result in injury and damage and shock and despair. So instead, what you do is you crumble the cluster of complaints into smaller, easier, digestible complaints, each one of which would be accepted in and of itself, and then every once in a while, inform him or her of one of them, and they will be able to accept it more easily. This is a big, big yesod. If let's say you have five complaints against your husband or wife, five major complaints, don't voice them all at once. Choose the most pressing one. You pick one that's bothering you the most, and choose to discuss only that. Then, after working through that with your husband or wife, 2 months later, you wait till 2 months pass, then pick the second one in your list and start discussing that one. Don't unveil all your complaints at the same time. Hashem does that rachmanis with us. We do 10 or 12 or 20 different aveiros and different punishments or a huge boulder. He doesn't zets us all at once. He slowly, slowly, with rachmanis, gives you signals so that you're not hurt by them. You do the same thing with your spouse. You choose one. You don't pile on with 10, 20 different grievances in one shot and overwhelm them like throwing a huge boulder at them. The one thing that bothers you the most now, you pick that, and in the tactful way that we described in previous shiurim, you work through trying to correct that. There's a pirush called Kedusha Alev when he talks about Avraham Avinu giving Avimelech Musar about the wells. It says there that he had other complaints also against Avimelech, but he did not bring them up. Whether he brought them up later in the Medrash, I don't know, but he chose to only bring up the main aspect. So this is the idea. Don't do this of piling on. But the other way around is also important. Don't nitpick. You know, don't pick and pick away at your spouse every month and nudge with something else. It has to be done with a seichel. Right? So, for example, what's incorrect? If you say something like this, here's a litany of a bunch of complaints at once in one sentence. You spend too much money. You're always talking on the phone. The house is a mess. I'm sick of your sister's kids coming over all the time. Bunched up four different complaints in one sentence. Boom. No. What's the correct way? One of them. And whatever which one it is. So you could say, for example, we have to figure out some way to cut back on our expenses. Could we sit down and maybe we could talk and figure out a way of how to save money? If we could have a discussion about that and work through that problem first. Then a few months later, you could mention the next thing. You know, I so enjoy talking with you, but when the phone, you know, when we're sitting in the supper, the phone always interrupts our conversations. Why don't we turn off the phone during supper so we could have some quiet time together? free of distraction, then you bring up that second issue. So that's the idea, the piling on. Huge boulders that you avoid. Instead, you do it little by little with sensitivity. Bracha v'atzlacha.